Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns. This is my outdoor podcast for people who are indoors and would rather be out at the moment. I spend a lot of time, or did when I could, exploring the remoter glens of the Highlands, places where you're unlikely to find another footprint. But I'm noticing these days, even in some of these really remote glens, you see tire tracks where you would never have seen them before. And that's got to point to, obviously, the increasing popularity of mountain biking. So I've got Hannah Collingridge with me today, who is a mountain bike expert, and I'm going to talk to her about her life on a bike and also her new book, her new guidebook to the Pennine Bridleway. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, John.
Hi. Now, tell me, how on earth did you get into mountain biking then?
Oh, Lordy, you always start with the easy questions, don't you?
Absolutely.
How did I start? Well, I think it's just a case of I've always ridden bikes, and off-road to me is much more interesting than on-road. So it's gone from riding whatever bike I had as a child to actually something that's designed to go much more comfortably off-road. And that's continued.
Right. And when did you get your first proper mountain bike? Well, I mean, I suppose that's a difficult question to answer, isn't it, really?
It is, because again, that starts going into when were proper mountain bikes. You know, what do you define as a proper mountain bike? I suppose I was late teens, although it's something I discovered more in my 30s and 40s. Well, not go beyond there, because I'm not quite beyond that point.
And tell us a bit about mountain bikes then. How have they, I mean, you know, obviously one of the main reasons, I suppose, that you see people riding on the hills these days is that they can. They've got better equipment. They've got better gear. How have mountain bikes improved then over the last few years?
It's things that they are designed for what they do. So you have low gears, which means you can go up ridiculously steep things. They have nice, chunky, grippy tyres, and tyre manufacturing is a whole separate science.
Oh, right.
But tyres have really come on in the last 20 years. So you've got much more capable things than just even in the rubber. We've got better suspension, so you've got a comfier ride, which means you can ride for longer. And there's nice things such as dropper posts, which is a seat post that drops out of the way at a press of a button. Meaning you can ride much more technical terrain more easily. Brakes actually stop you now, which is even in the wet, which is a nice thing to have.
Yes.
So there's sort of all these little bits and pieces sort of formed together to produce something that's actually really quite pleasant to ride off road. I mean, you've always been able to ride off road if you look at stuff like the Rough Stuff Fellowship and their.
Yes, that's right. That was a group about what, 20, 30 years ago?
I know, they've been going much longer than that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and they're if you want to look at their photographs and stuff, they have an Instagram feed which is well worth nosying at. Because you think, how on earth did you get to some of those places on that bike? And then, so off-roading has always been there. It's just that now we have comfier bikes to do.
Yeah. The Rough Stuff Fellowship, they basically took road bikes to places where you shouldn't really take road bikes, didn't they?
Yeah, it's what they had. And I'm a big fan of riding what you've got where you want to ride it.
Yeah. I suspect they carried their bikes for a fair bit. But
there's one of their famous sayings is, I never go for a walk without my bike.
Is that right? I've not heard that one. Very good. I like that.
I can't remember who said it. It is somebody specific, but I can't remember who that was. But I like that. Every time I end up pushing my bike up a track that's not particularly rideable, I think of that.
No, so that's a great saying. That yeah, I can certainly testify. I've got a road bike and a very basic mountain bike that I cycle into Bothies, and when I can. And I will testify the fact that the brakes work. I will, because I was on my mountain bike riding around town, and a taxi driver pulled out in front of me, as taxi drivers do, you know. And if I'd been on my road bike, I would have been embedded in his passenger door. Unfortunately, I put the brakes on the mountain bike. And I thought, oh, I've stopped. So yeah, they're pretty good at that, you know. When did you? What was the? I don't know. What would you say the highlights of your sort of mountain biking career are at the moment? Then what's the rides that really stand out to you?
It's the exploring ones. I have a great desire to look at maps and go, oh, there's a long green dashed line there. Where does it go? What does it do?
Right.
Obviously, that's in England and Wales with our antiquated system of access here. But yeah, it's that exploring. So done a lot of stuff in mid Wales. There is a chap in a kind of barn really down there called Stuart Wright, who has done an awful lot for bikepacking in the UK and runs an event called the Welsh Ride Thing every year, where on Maybank holiday, or usually every year, Maybank holiday, a load of people with bags on their bikes turn up in mid Wales and disappear into the wilds for 2 or 3 days and then come back and eat cake and tea. It's a really good laid back kind of event and vibe to it. And his main thing is go off and have fun. Go and discover somewhere new. There's plenty of tracks around there to be discovered. Don't take yourself too seriously and ride your bike is his great motto. So mid Wales has a lot of very happy memories for me. Similarly, Little Lake District, and again, that kind of wandering off and going, oh, well, we're not feeling quite as tired as we thought we might be. We'll wander that way. And of course, if you're wild camping, it doesn't matter where you end up, particularly, as long as you can be discreet and either
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah. My great memory of my first ever attempt at taking a mountain bike into a bothy, I went to Glenbeg Bothy, which is a really remote place, and it's a long, long track to get there, and it was great. I cycled in there, got there no bother, or when I say I got there no bother, I got within about a mile of the bothy when there was a huge bog. And I discovered that getting a mountain bike through a bog is not much fun. You must have had experiences like that, have you?
Yes. But you know, that's not the whole trip, is it? So I think as long as you don't have a sense of humour failure, you're fine. And I'm just actually thinking about one particular sense of humour fail I had in Wales, because I hadn't eaten enough, and it just all went that little bit wrong, and nothing in particular. You just know when you're not quite on form. And you end up having a hissy fit in the middle of a field.
Right, right. Well, I've done a few of those, I must admit.
Yeah.
Where was this particular hissy fit then?
Somewhere just outside Llanidloes, I think.
Right, okay.
There was a woman walking with a young dog who was very friendly, but not in control.
Ah, so right.
I ended up covered in mud from this very bouncy dog. And just, yeah, the field then was boggy. We couldn't ride through it. And then a bit later, when you've had something to eat, you think, what on earth was that about?
I did have a brief look at your Instagram account, which I'll put a link to on this page. And I did notice, I have to say, some images of some very fine looking bruises. And I wonder, it did cross. I thought maybe there's a downside to mountain biking here that we haven't touched on. What? How did you come about with those bruises then?
Well, the last one, it's ridiculous. Most of our riding here, we live in Leeds, and most of our riding is sort of urban bits and pieces connecting other trails. So you've got to kind of wiggle your way through the rubbish stuff to get to the good stuff. We've got an IKEA near to us. And there's a path on an old road that leads up the back of this IKEA. On one side is a sort of hedgy thing that very rarely gets cut back. And on the other side, there's a chain link fence. And the last two crushes I've had over the bars and things have been up that particular path.
Oh, right.
Far in the chain link fence and just gone over. So the last bruise, the big one on my thigh, was a handlebar into the end of my leg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it did hurt. What was funnier was my photographer friend Jules was ahead of me, didn't hear me fall off. It must have been at some point where we could ride as two households as well, because my missus and Jules's husband were behind us and they couldn't get past me because I was kind of wedged in the fence and the ground with this bar in my leg.
Great.
It relied on a passing walker who'd seen what was happening, and she was shouting after Jules, but she's of a certain age, so she doesn't hear everything.
Okay.
So this lady had to untangle me, and because she's doing it with all that COVID thing going, I've got to help somebody, but stay away from them. Oh no, I actually need to get a bit closer than that. So, I mean, she was very, very friendly and very helpful, but yeah, that one hurt.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing you just wish afterwards you got a video of that, don't you, really?
Yeah.
That would be a YouTube sensation. No problem, I would have thought by the sound of it. So you've your book, your guidebook to the Pennine Bridal Way, that comes out very shortly, is that right?
It comes out on May the 6th, so it's available for pre-order now.
Right, okay.
Hopefully the pre-orders will be back in the country and being posted out by the end of next month.
Right. Okay. So it's imminent, as they say. And let's hope the publication of your book sort of coincides with restrictions easing.
Because that
would be great, wouldn't it? That would be really nice. Tell us about the Pennine Bridal Way. What is it exactly? Because obviously I've heard of it, but that's about the only thing I can say.
So the Pennine Bridal Way is the only national trail in England and Wales to actually be a bridal way all the way through. So it's actually designed for horse and bike riders.
Right.
So that's its sort of main, that's its main selling point. Other national trails do have a lot of stuff, especially the southern stuff where the rights of way tends to be slightly different.
Right, yeah.
Something
yeah.
like the Ridgeway, you can cycle a lot of it, but you can't cycle all of it. So the Pennine Bridal Way really came out of a slightly bolshy woman called Mary Townley, who lived at the back of Burnley. I mean, she was an equestrian, very well off, but she was really cheesed off about the number of old routes that she could see around her. She knew they existed, but that weren't technically rights of way.
Her
friends designed a route from up in the northeast down to house, I think, and maybe a little bit further, and went off and rode it, and that made the case for the sort of whatever the Countryside Commission was at that point to actually come up with the trail. So it's quite interesting because the Pennine Way came out of a really working class movement,
yes,
the Pennine Bridal Way came out of a really rather privileged background, rather moneyed background. So there's a really interesting distinction between the two.
Well, I mean, the Pennine Way, as I'm sure you're aware, took many years of negotiation and bribery, and I think it even took an Act of Parliament to actually get the way completed. And was that the same then with the Pennine Bridal Way?
It was a lot quicker. But I think because of that history of national trails having been formed, I think once we got the Pennine Way and we had that precedent for national trails as a kind of concept, things were easier. So then the Pennine Way, we all owe so much to in so many ways.
Yes. So tell us about the Bridal Way. Where does it go? What sort of describe the route to us if you can.
It starts at Middleton Top in the White Peak. So it's on the first 15 miles are very easy. They're on an old railway.
Right, okay.
But that railway goes through some quite fascinating prehistoric monuments as well. It's not just as boring as riding along an old railway might seem. It then cuts down Cheedale and goes over the Montle Trail, which is another old railway. It sort of wiggles up through the White Peak. Then gets the Dark Peak at Rushup Edge. So the riding immediately changes with the change of rock and becomes quite a chunk more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
We then wiggle through Hayfield. And again, there's so many trails around Hayfield. It's a lovely place to start riding if you want to do any of the Dark Peak stuff. And it keeps just trundling upwards on lots of kind of old tracks that maybe haven't been tarmacked. There's another couple of old railways. It crosses all three of the Transpennine canals as well. So it's really sort of connected to the old transport routes through the hills. We've got the Roman Road where it crosses Standage. So that's quite interesting area because you've got the railway tunnel and the canal tunnels going under the hill. You've got several turnpikes and Roman efforts going over the hill as we all try to find that kind of east-west connection that the Pennines get in the way of everything. So where were we up to? So it goes into the kind of industrial heartland of the Pennines, using the old tracks that are sort of perched on the side of the hill, largely to keep them out of the wet, soggy valley bottoms. Where are we up to then? Heads north and joins the kind of the Yorkshire Dales after Long Preston. You have a soggy bit across the Craven Valley before that, but we start getting back into the Yorkshire Dales and the limestone again back at Settle, and has this glorious ride through the Dales up to just short of Kirby Stephen. So it's a ride full of variety.
That's going through some very different countryside, isn't it, really? Some of it must be semi-industrial, and some of it, and a lot of it is wild moorland, I'm guessing. Is that right?
Yeah. It's a ride of great contrast. It's a ride of geological contrast. It goes over a lot of the major northern fault lines. An absolutely fascinating ride, really.
And is it something, I mean, you know, I don't really know much about standards of mountain biking, but do you have to be super fit to do this, or is it something that persons of my stature might be able to attempt?
It's not as easy as the first 15 miles, which the railway suggests.
Right, because they'll be flat, won't they? Yeah.
Are pretty flat. It's hilly for a railway in places.
Right.
So it's very much up and down. There is very little flat on the entire route. It's up, down, which can get tiring.
Yes.
In terms of riding challenge, if you're a perfectly competent or pretty capable rider, there's nothing super technical on it. There are bits you'll end up walking because it's a natural trail, so it's subject to erosion. I can't tell you what a particular bit looks like today, for instance. Although being a national trail, it does get maintained by the rangers.
Right.
So it's more the cumulative up and downing that will get your legs.
So the total distance, what's the total distance like?
Oh, God, I can never remember. it's one of those things, isn't it? It's ridiculous. I've been looking at this.
This is the person who wrote a guidebook. There's a handy book you might want to look at.
I know. I'm just trying to find my copy, my proof. Let's have a look. How far is it? Oh, God, it's all in kilometres.
Oh, not. I wanted it in real money.
No, I can't. I had to do it in both when I was working on it. I can't do a cent in metres either. So I spent half the time translating from backwards and forwards.
Don't worry, we'll leave that to be discovered. I'm guessing it's something like 200 miles, but I don't know about that. I could be wrong.
270k.
That's more or less 200 miles, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, whatever that is.
If my maths is any good. Yeah, okay. No, it's a long way.
I really must. No, it's about 160 miles, I think. There's about 4 days of 40-ish miles, I think.
That's what I was going to ask you, actually. Is it the sort of thing you could bike pack in a reasonable time, then? I mean, people presumably do that a lot, do they?
Yeah, although we didn't see anybody. I knew it's been difficult this summer, so whenever hard to know whether people were... What exactly are their long term plans? But yeah, you can bike pack it. So you can either, you know, use B&Bs. There's plenty of accommodation along most of the route, or take your own stuff and find a discreet place to illicitly sleep. Again, there's plenty of stuff like that. And being the Pennines, in most places there's plenty of water too.
Yeah.
Sometimes too much. But it is one of the features in the kind of industrial Pennine bit that you ride over an awful lot of reservoir embankments, because that bit of the Pennines has the terrain that's suitable for building reservoirs and a lot of thirsty cities around it. So
yeah, I never thought of that. That's true. You do. I mean, obviously, I know the Pennine Way reasonably well, and yeah, I never realised that. But yeah, you do. You a lot of the time you're riding along reservoirs, you know, or walking.
We've got those lovely steep sided cliffs. All you need to do is build a wall at one end. It fills up with water, and uh-huh. You can pipe it off to Oldham or Manchester or Burnley or wherever you like.
Oh right, okay. And is there, and this is a daft question in a way, but what is the wind an issue? Because one of my yet another of my fails about mountain biking was I tried to cycle into the centre of the Mon Lieu, which is a sort of remote area of hillside hills around here, and I must have cycled for about 10 miles into the wind, and after 10 miles into the wind I was half dead, and I turned round and I came out like a bullet. It was amazing. So I don't know, is that an issue on the bridle way?
It can be, yeah, and it's why although you can ride it either way, I would go south to north.
Oh well, that's a good point then. South to north, that makes yeah. a difference in terms of the wind, does it? I don't know.
Well, in terms of the wind, usually our prevailing winds in this country, but also then you get the more exciting stuff later on. I'd always, and then there's something in me. I'd always rather ride north, really.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why that is, but yeah, I'm the same. Yeah, I would rather walk, go. I always go north until I can't go north anymore, which is basically why I live up here. So, and if people wanted to cycle it, but they didn't want to backpack it, bike pack it, are there services that'll take your luggage for you and that kind of stuff?
This bit, I don't know. It's been very, again, it's been really weird trying to.
Of course, this time of year, you wouldn't know. Yeah.
And trying to find out some information has been really quite difficult and therefore isn't as full as I'd have liked. I am sure, because the national trails are sort of relaunching the Pennine Bridle Way this year. There's a new map from Harvey's coming out that'll do the whole thing on one sheet, which will be incredibly useful.
Right.
So I suspect, and we've got the book, obviously, which everybody will flock to buy and
absolutely,
you know, tell their friends about. But apart from that, so I'm presuming that will kick off a kind of, yeah, if you don't want to carry your own luggage.
Actually, there'll be a tidal wave of people coming down it, I would imagine. That sounds really good.
There'll be a tidal wave, people doing the first bit and then going, oh, God, it's got a bit hard.
Yes, I'm sure that's the case. Yeah. So it sounds amazing. And there are, your book is produced by Vertebrate Publishing, isn't it? And they've, I think, a series of at least 7 or 8 different mountain bike guidebooks that
there's more than that, John.
Is there more than that? Okay.
I'm looking at my own bookshelf and I haven't got all of them. And I think I've got 14.
14, so, I stand corrected. Okay.
Well, that, like I say, I may haven't got all of them, just most of them.
Right, okay.
So there are, yeah, they've been doing, I think that's where they started mountain biking in the peak. And because obviously they're in Sheffield, so obviously the peak's the easy one to do for them.
Okay.
So as far as I know, that's going to keep expanding as well.
I think John Barton's written quite a few of them. He's obviously he's the the boss of Vertebrate. So I think he's a mountain biker himself, I think. I think it's mainly because he can eat cake, as far as I know. But he does do a fair amount. Cake does sound to be a theme for mountain biking.
for me, it's pies.
Pies. Oh yeah. Oh,
pies. Yeah. Good meat pie.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Several places along the Pennine Bridleway I can recommend for beet pies.
I mean, I personally think that the ability to consume confectionery or indulge in pies and cakes after a very long walk is actually one of the main reasons for doing it, because you can do it without a car. If you've been cycling all day, you've been walking all day, you can do it completely without any conscience, which is great, really. Plus the fact they taste better, don't they?
Yeah. There's nothing like a long ride or a long walk, and you come in, it's nice warm pie.
Oh, did I stop it? Yes, that sounds a good idea. Yeah, and I was wondering, what do you think the average number of times someone would fall off on the bridle way would be?
Oh, it depends entirely on your skill. I've ridden all of the downs. I don't think I stopped. It's a couple of dabs in places, you know, where you put a cheeky foot down, but I didn't actually fall off.
A dab is where you sort of, I take it that's where you sort of have a bit of a wobble, is it?
Yeah, and you put your foot down, so you've not actually ridden it, but you've not fallen off either.
Oh, okay. I have a lot of dabs, and I'm quite an expert at it, to be quite honest.
Having said that, I haven't ridden most of the trail loaded. So right. Although I've ridden it all, I haven't ridden it with a load, and that can quite often make a difference, because obviously the added weight, it's like with backpacking. It's harder to go uphill, and you're slightly more unsteady on the downs.
Oh, I didn't realise it made that way. All right, okay. Because obviously the weights slow down, isn't it? So I suppose it would make it a lot harder. It's just as you say, it's just like backpacking, you know.
So, yeah, and again, like with backpacking, I would strongly suggest if you're going to go out and do any kind of loaded riding, go out and try it on your local trail and feel how different your bike feels and reacts as well.
All right, so that's a good good little tip to go out. Basically, go somewhere you know first. Is that really so that you'll get understand what the bike can and can't do, or maybe you.
Yeah, and again, similarly to backpacking. You won't have your load right the first time you go out. You won't have things exactly where you want them. Something will be a bit uneven, or you'll think, why did I pack that all the way down there? So again, it's that kind of experience.
Right, that's a good point, because that's something I've struggled with as well. What would be your tip then? What did you try and achieve if you're trying to pack a bike, pack say panniers and stuff, you know?
Well, it's nice these days because there are so many available budgets and ranges of bags to put on your bike. Don't tend to use panniers, but there's things there's things you can strap on. So things like a seat pack or a bar roll that will strap onto your handlebars. And again, I like to keep things in groups. So all my stuff is in my front bar bag. So in there, I've got my bivy bag, I've got my sleeping bag and my mat and everything. If I'm taking poles or a tarp, it's all in there. So I know when I get to camp, that's my sleeping stuff.
Oh, okay. I've got panniers, but are there reasons you would advise against panniers? Are they basically not the best way of carrying stuff?
They're an absolutely fine way of carrying stuff. I think part of it is fashion, and the fashion is not to use panniers.
Right, okay.
I think also part of it is slightly more practical. If you're going on narrow trails, sometimes it's easier to maneuver without panniers.
The fact
that nobody's ever seems to point out that the fact that your handlebars aren't wider than the back of your bike doesn't seem to have crossed anybody's mind.
Okay.
So I would advise using what you've got. Don't be too swayed by what you read on the internet about the latest must-haves. What have you got? What can you use? Go off and have an adventure.
Well, you've inspired me there. I think when the weather improves a bit and I'm allowed to go somewhere, I'll haul my poor old mountain bike out the shed and load it up and go somewhere, you know?
Why not? Again, it depends on when the body's reopened, doesn't it? you know, are they going to open at the same time that we're allowed to all go out moving?
Well, that's true. That's true. But what I probably would do is I could take my lightweight tent, you see. So that's one way of doing it. So that would be quite good. I don't know when the bothies will reopen. That's a $64,000 question up here. Not for a long time, I suspect. But anyway. Anyway, listen, Hannah, it's been really very interesting talking to you. And I think your book about the Pennine Bride Way and the other guides sort of open up a whole new world for people, which I think is really great. So I really hope your book does well. And it's been fantastic talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for talking. Bye-bye.
Bye.